the mini frontier. His father had been sweating, trembling, barely able to load his rifle, but Jesper had found his calling. Now, he braced his arms on the top of the crate where he'd taken cover and let loose with both barrels. His weapons were Zemini made revolvers that could fire 6 shots in rapid succession, unmatched by anything in Kedidum. He felt them getting hot in his hands. Kaz had warned them to anticipate competition. Other teams bent on gaining the prize at any cost. But this was early in the job for things to be going so badly. They were surrounded, at least one man down. A burning ship at their backs. They lost their transportation to Fjerda, and if the shots raining down on them were any indication, they were seriously outnumbered. He supposed it could have been worse. They could have been on the boat when it exploded. Jesper crouched down to reload and couldn't quite believe the sight that met his eyes. Wylan Van Eck was actually curled up on the dock, his soft Murch's hands thrown over his head. Jesper heaved a sigh, lay down a few shots for cover, and lunged out from behind the sweet security of his crate. He seized Wylan by the collar of his shirt and yanked him back to shelter. Jesper gave him a little shake. "Pull it together, kid." "Not a kid," Wylan mumbled, batting Jesper's hands away. "Fine, you're an elder statesman. Do you know how to shoot?" Wylan nodded slowly. "Skeet." Jesper rolled his eyes. He snagged the rifle from his back and shoved it into Wyland's chest. "Great. This is just like shooting clay pigeons, but they make a different sound when you hit one." Jesper whirled, revolvers raised, as a shape sprang into his peripheral vision. But it was just Kaz. "Head east to the next dock. Board at berth 22, Kaz said.
"What's at berth 22?
"The real Ferelind. But the boat that blew was a decoy.
"You knew?"
"No. I took precautions. It's what I do, Jesper."
"You could have told us we..."
"That would defeat the purpose of a decoy. Get moving." Kaz glanced at Wylan, who stood there cradling the rifle like an infant. "And to make sure he gets to the ship in one piece." Jesper watched Kaz vanish back into the shadows, cane in one hand, pistol in the other. Even on one good leg, he was eerily spry. Then Jesper gave Wylan another jostle. "Let's go."
"Go?
Didn't you hear what Kaz said? We need to make it to berth 22. Wylan nodded dumbly. His eyes were dazed and wide enough to drink from. "Just stay behind me and try not to get killed. Ready?" Wylan shook his head. "Then forget I asked." He placed Wylan's hand on the rifle's grip. "Come on." Jesper laid down another series of shots, sketching a wild formation he hoped would disguise their location. One revolver empty, he lunged away from the crate and into the shadows. He half expected Wylan wouldn't follow, but he could hear the Merchling behind him, breathing hard, a low whistle in his lungs as they pounded toward the next stack of barrels. Jesper hissed as a bullet whizzed by his cheek, close enough to leave a burn. They threw themselves behind the barrels. From this vantage point, he saw Nina wedged into a space between 2 stacks of crates. She had her arms raised, and as one of their attackers moved into view, she clenched her fist. The boy crumpled to the ground, clutching his chest. She was at a disadvantage in this maze, though. Harkvenders needed to see their targets to bring them down. Helvar was beside her with his back to the crate, his hands bound. A reasonable precaution, but the Fjerdin was valuable, and Jesper had a moment to wonder why Kaz had left him in such straits before he saw Nina produce a knife from her sleeve and slash through Helvar's bonds. She slapped a pistol into his hands. "Defend yourself," she said with a growl, and then returned her focus to the fight. "Not smart," Jesper thought. "Do not turn your back on an angry Fjerdin." Helvar looked like he was seriously considering shooting her. Jesper lifted his revolver, prepared to bring the giant down. Then, Helvar was standing next to Nina, aiming into the maze of crates beyond. Just like that, they were fighting side by side. Had Kaz left Matthias bound with Nina deliberately? Jesper could never tell how much of what Kaz got away with was smarts and planning, and how much was dumb luck. He gave a sharp whistle. Nina glanced over her shoulder, and her gaze found Jesper's. He flashed two fingers, twice, and she gave a quick nod. Had she known Berth 22 was their real destination? Had Inej? Kaz was at it again, playing with information, keeping one or all of them blind and guessing. Jesper hated it, but he couldn't argue with the fact that they still had a way to get to Fjerda, if they lived to board the second schooner. He signaled to Wylan, and they continued to make their way past the boats and ships moored along the dock, keeping as low as possible. "There," he heard a voice shout from somewhere behind him. They'd been spotted. "Damn it," Jesper said. "Run." They pounded down the dock. There, at berth 22, was a trim-looking schooner with Ferroleaned written on its side. It was almost eerie how much it looked like the other boat. No lanterns had been lit aboard it, but as he and Wylan bolted up the ramp, two sailors emerged. "You're the first ones here," said Rotti. "Let's hope we're not the last. Are you armed?" He nodded. "Brekker told us to stay hidden until..." "This is until," Jesper said, pointing to the men storming toward them on the dock and snatching his rifle back from Wylan. "I need to get to high ground. Keep them back and distracted as long as you can." "Jesper," began Wylan, "no one gets past you. If they take down this schooner, we're done for." The men gunning for them didn't just care about keeping the dregs from leaving the harbor. They wanted them dead. Jesper fired at the two men leading the charge down the dock. One fell, and the other rolled left and took cover behind the bowsprit of a fishing boat. Jesper squeezed off three more shots, then sprinted up the mast. Below, he could hear more gunfire erupt. 10 feet up, 20, boots catching in the rigging. He should have stopped to take them off. He was 2 feet from the crow's nest when he felt a hot blade of pain sear through the flesh of his thigh. His foot slipped, and for a moment he dangled above the distant deck with nothing but his slippery palms clinging to the ropes. He forced his legs to work and sought purchase with the toes of his boots. His right leg was nearly worthless from the gunshot, and he had to pull himself up the last few feet with his arms trembling and his heart pounding in his ears. Every one of his senses felt like it was on fire. Definitely better than a winning streak at the tables. He didn't stop to rest. He hooked his bad leg in the rigging, ignoring the pain, checked the sight on his rifle, and began picking off anyone in range.
4 million Kruger, he told himself, as he reloaded and found another enemy in his sights.
The mist made visibility poor, but this was the skill that had kept him in the dregs, even after his debts had mounted, and it had become clear that Jesper loved the cards more than luck loved him. 4 million Kruger would erase his debt and land him in clover for a good long while. He spotted Nina and Matthias trying to make their way onto the pier, but at least 10 men were in their way. Kaz seemed to be running in the opposite direction, and Inej was nowhere to be found, though that didn't mean much when it came to the Wraith. She could be hanging from the sails 2 feet away from him, and he probably wouldn't know it. "Jesper!" The shout came from far below, and it took a moment for Jesper to realize it was Wylan calling to him. He tried to ignore him, taking aim again. "Jesper!" "I'm going to kill that little idiot." "What do you want?" he shouted down. "Close your eyes. You can't kiss me from down there, Wylan." "Just do it." "This better be good." He shut his eyes. "Are they closed?" "Damn it, Wylan. Yes, they're..." There was a shrill, shrieking howl, and then bright light bloomed behind Jesper's lids. When it faded, he opened his eyes. Below, he saw men blundering around, rendered blind by the flash bomb Weiland had set off. But Jesper could see perfectly. Not bad for a merchant's kid, he thought to himself, and opened fire.
12. Inej. Before Inej had ever set foot on the high wire or even a practice rope, her father had taught her to fall, to protect her head and minimize the impact by not fighting her own momentum. Even as the blast from the harbor lifted her off her feet, she was tucking into a roll. She hit hard, but she was up in seconds, pressed against the side of a crate, her ears ringing, her nose singed by the sharp scent of gunpowder. Inej spared Kaz and the others a single glance, then did what she did best. She vanished. She launched herself up the cargo crate, scaling them like a nimble insect, her rubber-soled feet finding grips and footholds. The view from above was disturbing. The dregs were outnumbered, and there were men working their way around the left and the right flanks. Kaz had been right to keep their real point of departure a secret from the others. Someone had talked. Inej had tried to keep tabs on the team, but someone else in the gang could have been snooping. Kaz had said it himself. Everything in Ketterdam leaked, including the Slat and the Crow Club. Someone was firing down from the masts of the New Ferrolind. Hopefully that meant Jesper had made it to the schooner, and she just had to buy the others enough time to make it there as well. Inej ran lightly over the tops of the crates, making her way down the row, seeking her targets below. It was easy enough. None of them expected the threat to come from above. She slid to the ground behind two men, firing at Nina, and said a silent prayer as she slit one throat, then the next. When the second man dropped, she crouched beside him and rolled up his right sleeve. A tattoo of a hand, its first and second fingers cut off at the knuckle. Black tips. Was this retribution for Kaz's showdown with Giles or something more? They shouldn't have been able to raise these kinds of numbers. She moved on to the next aisle of crates, following a mental map of the other attackers' positions. First, she took down a girl holding a massive, unwieldy rifle, then skewered the man who was supposed to be watching her flank. His tattoo showed five birds in a wedge formation. Razor gulls. Just how many gangs were they up against? The next corner was blind. Should she scale the cargo containers to check her position or risk what might be waiting for her on the other side? She took a deep breath, sank low, and slipped around the corner in a lunge. Tonight her saints were kind. Two men were firing on the docks with their backs to her. She dispatched them with two quick thrusts of her blades. Six bodies, six lives taken. She was going to have to do a lot of penance, but she'd helped even the odds a bit, in the dregs' favor. Now she needed to get to the schooner. She wiped her knives on her leather breeches and returned them to their sheaths, then backed up and took a running start at the nearest cargo container. As her fingers gripped the rim, she felt a piercing pain beneath her arm. She turned in time to see Uman's ugly face split in a determined grimace. All the intelligence she had gathered on the black tips came back to her in a sickening rush. Uman, Giel's shambling enforcer. The one who could crush skulls with his bare hands. He yanked her down and grabbed the front of her vest, giving the knife in her side a sharp twist, and Inej fought not to black out. As her hood fell back, he exclaimed,
"Gazen, I've got Brecker's wraith."
"You should have aimed higher," Inej gasped.
"Missed my heart." "Don't want you dead, wraith," he said. "You're quite the prize. Can't wait to hear all the gossip you've gathered for Dirty Hands, and all his secrets, too. I love a good story."
"I can tell you how this one ends," she said on an uneasy breath, "but you're not going to like it."
"That's so."
He slammed her up against the crate, and pain crashed through her. Her toes only brushed the ground as blood spurted from the wound at her side. Uman's forearm was braced against her shoulders, keeping her arms pinned.
"Do you know the secret to fighting a scorpion?"
He laughed.
Talking nonsense, Wraith. Don't die too quick. Need to get you patched up.
She crossed one ankle behind the other and heard a reassuring click. She wore the pads at her knees for crawling and climbing. But there was another reason, too. Namely, the tiny steel blades hidden in each of them.
The secret, she panted, is to never take your eyes off the scorpion's tail.
She brought her knee up, jamming the blade between Uman's legs. He shrieked and released her, hands going to his bleeding groin.
She staggered back down the row of crates.
She could hear men shouting to each other, the pop of gunfire coming in smatters and bursts now. Who was winning? Had the others made it to the schooner? A wave of dizziness rolled over her. When she touched her fingers to the wound at her side, they came away wet. Too much blood. Footsteps. Someone was coming. She couldn't climb, not with this wound, not with the amount of blood she'd lost. She remembered her father putting her on the rope ladder for the first time.
Climb, Inej.
The cargo containers were stacked like a pyramid here. If she could make it up just one, she could hide herself on the first level.
Just one.
She could climb or she could stand there and die. She willed her mind to clarity and hopped up, fingertips latching onto the top of the crate.
Climb, Inej.
She dragged herself over the edge onto the tin roof of the container. It felt good to lie there, but she knew she'd left a trail of blood behind her.
One more, she told herself. One more, and you'll be safe.
She forced herself up to her knees and reached for the next crate. The surface beneath her began to rock. She heard laughter from below.
Come out, Wraith. We have secrets to tell.
Desperately, she reached for the lip of the next crate again and gripped it, fighting through an onslaught of pain as the container under her dropped away. Then she was just hanging, legs dangling helplessly down. They didn't open fire. They wanted her alive.
Come on down, Wraith.
She didn't know where the strength came from, but she managed to pull herself over the top. She lay on the crate's roof, panting.
Just one more.
But she couldn't. Couldn't push to her knees, couldn't reach, couldn't even roll. It hurt too much.
Climb, Inej.
I can't, Papa, she whispered. Even now, she hated to disappoint him.
Move, she told herself. This is a stupid place to die.
And yet a voice in her head said there were worse places. She would die here, in freedom, beneath the beginnings of dawn. She'd die after a worthy fight, not because some man had tired of her or required more from her than she could give. Better to die here by her own blade than with her face painted and her body swathed in false silks. A hand seized her ankle. They'd climbed the crates. Why hadn't she heard them? Was she that far gone? They had her. Someone was turning her onto her back. She slid the dagger from the sheath at her wrist. In the barrel, a blade this sharp was known as kind steel. It meant a quick death. Better that than torture at the mercy of the black tips or the razor gulls.
May the saints receive me.
She pressed the tip beneath her breast, between her ribs, an arrow to her heart. Then a hand gripped her wrist painfully, forcing her to drop the blade.
Not just yet, Inej.
The rasp of stone on stone. Her eyes flew open.
Kaz.
He bundled her into his arms and leapt down from the crates, landing roughly, his bad leg buckling. She moaned when they hit the ground.
Did we win? I'm here, aren't I?
He must be running. Her body jounced painfully against his chest with every lurching step. He couldn't carry her and use his cane.
I don't want to die. I'll do my best to make other arrangements for you.
She closed her eyes.
Keep talking, Wraith. Don't slip away from me.
But it's what I do best. He clutched her tighter.
Just make it to the schooner. Open your damn eyes, Inej.
She tried. Her vision was blurring, but she could make out a pale, shiny scar on Kaz's neck, right beneath his jaw. She remembered the first time she'd seen him at the menagerie. He'd paid Tanta Helene for information, stock tips, political pillow talk, anything the menagerie's clients blabbed about when drunk or giddy on bliss. He never visited Helene's girls, though plenty would have been happy to take him up to their rooms. They claimed he gave them the shivers, that his hands were permanently stained with blood beneath those black gloves. But she had recognized the eagerness in their voices and the way they tracked him with their eyes. One night, as he'd passed her in the parlor, she'd done a foolish thing, a reckless thing. "I can help you," she'd whispered. He'd glanced at her, then proceeded on his way as if she'd said nothing at all. The next morning, she'd been called to Tanta Helene's parlor. She'd been sure another beating was coming, or worse. But instead, Kaz Brekker had been standing there, leaning on his crow-head cane, waiting to change her life. "I can help you," she said now.
"Help me with what?"
She couldn't remember. There was something she was supposed to tell him. It didn't matter anymore.
"Talk to me, Wraith."
"You came back for me."
"I protect my investments."
"Investments.
I'm glad I'm bleeding all over your shirt." "I'll put it on your tab."
Now she remembered. He owed her an apology.
"Say you're sorry." "For what?"
"Just say it." She didn't hear his reply. The world had grown very dark indeed.
13. Kaz. "Get us out of here," Kaz shouted as soon as he limped aboard the schooner with Inej in his arms. The sails were already trimmed, and they were on their way out of the harbor in moments, though not nearly as fast as he would have liked. He knew he should have tried to secure some squalors for the journey, but they were hell to come by. There was chaos on deck, people shouting and trying to get the schooner into open sea as quickly as possible. "Spect!" he yelled at the man he'd chosen to captain the vessel, a sailor with a talent for knife work who had fallen on hard times and ended up stuck in the lower ranks of the dregs. "Get your crew in shape before I start cracking skulls." Spect saluted, then seemed to catch himself. He wasn't in the Navy any longer, and Kaz wasn't a commanding officer. The pain in Kaz's leg was terrible. The worst it had been since he'd first broken it falling off the roof of a bank near the Geldstraat. It was possible he'd fracture the bone again. Inej's weight wasn't helping. But when Jesper stepped into his path to offer help, Kaz shoved past him. "Where's Nina?" Kaz snarled. "Seeing to the wounded below. She already took care of me." Dimly, Kaz registered the dried blood on Jesper's thigh. "Wyland got dinged during the fight. Let me help you." "Get out of my way," Kaz said, and plunged past him down the ramp that led below decks. He found Nina tending to Wyland in a narrow cabin, her hands drifting over his arm, knitting the flesh of the bullet wound together. It was barely a graze. "Move," Kaz demanded, and Wyland practically leapt from the table. "I'm not finished," began Nina, then she caught sight of Inej. "Saints," she swore. "What happened?" "Knife wound." The cramped cabin was lit by several bright lanterns, and a stash of clean bandages had been laid out on a shelf beside a bottle of camphor. Gently, Kaz placed Inej on the table that had been bolted to the deck. "There's a lot of blood," Nina said on a low breath. "Help her." "Kaz, I'm a heart render, not a healer. She'll be dead by the time we find one. Get to work." "You're in my light." Kaz stepped back into the passageway. Inej lay perfectly still on the table, her luminous brown skin dull in the swaying lamplight. He was alive because of Inej. They all were. They'd managed to fight their way out of a corner, but only because she prevented them from being surrounded. Kaz knew death. He could feel its presence on the ship now, looming over them, ready to take his wraith.
He was covered in her blood. "Unless you can be useful, go away," Nina said without looking up at him. "You're making me nervous." He hesitated, then stomped back the way he'd come, stomping to purloin a clean shirt from another cabin. He shouldn't be this shaken up by a dock brawl, even a shootout. But he was. Something inside him felt frayed and raw. It was the same feeling he'd had as a boy. Those first desperate days after Geordie's death.
"Say you're sorry."
That was the last thing Inej had said to him. What had she wanted him to apologize for? There are so many possibilities. 1,000 crimes. 1,000 stupid jibes. On deck, he took a deep breath of sea air, watching the harbor and Ketterdam fade from view on the horizon. "What the hell just happened?" Jasper asked. He was leaning against the railing, his rifle beside him. His hair was mussed, his pupils dilated. He seemed almost drunk, or like he'd just rolled out of someone's bed. He always had that look after a fight. Helvar was bent over the railing, vomiting. Not a sailor, apparently. At some point, they'd need to shackle his legs again. "We were ambushed," Weiland said from his perch on the forecastle deck. He had his sleeve pushed up and was running his fingers over the red spot where Nina had seen to his wound. Jasper shot Weiland a withering glare. "Private tutors from the university, and that's what this kid comes up with? We were ambushed?" Weiland reddened. "Stop calling me kid. We're practically the same age." "You're not going to like the other names I come up with for you." "I know we were ambushed. That doesn't explain how they knew we would be there. Maybe Big Bolliger wasn't the only black-tip spy in the dregs." "Giles doesn't have the brains or the resources to bite back this fast or this hard alone," Kaz said. "You sure? Because it felt like a pretty big bite." "Let's ask." Kaz limped over to where Roddy had stashed Uman.
"I stuck your wraith," Uman had giggled when Kaz had spotted him curled up on the ground. "I stuck her good." Kaz had glanced at the blood on Uman's thigh and said, "Looks like she got you too."
But her aim had been off, or Uman wouldn't have been talking to anyone. He'd knocked the enforcer out and had Roddy retrieve him while he went to find Inej. Now Helvar and Jasper dragged Uman over to the rail, his hands bound. "Stand them up." With one huge hand, Helvar hauled Uman to his feet. Uman grinned, his thatch of coarse white hair flat against his wide forehead.
"Why don't you tell me what brought so many black tips out in force tonight?" Kaz said.
"We owed you." "A public brawl with guns out and 30 men packing? I don't think so." Uman snickered. "Giles doesn't like being bested."
"I could fit Giles' brains in the toe of my boot, and Big Bolliger was his only source inside the dregs."
"Maybe he..."
Kaz interrupted him. "I want you to think real careful now, Uman. Giles probably thinks you're dead. So there are no rules of barter here. I can do what I want with you."
Uman spat in his face. Kaz took a handkerchief from his coat pocket and carefully wiped his face clean. He thought of Inej, lying still on the table, her slight weight in his arms.
"Hold him," he told Jasper and the Fjorden. Kaz flicked his coat sleeve and an oyster shucking knife appeared in his hand. At any given time, he had at least 2 knives stashed somewhere in his clothes. He didn't even count this one, really, a tidy, wicked little blade. He made a neat slash across Uman's eye, from brow to cheekbone, and before Uman could draw breath to cry out, he made a second cut in the opposite direction, a nearly perfect X. Now Uman was screaming. Kaz wiped the knife clean, returned it to his sleeve, and drove his gloved fingers into Uman's eye socket. He shrieked and twitched as Kaz yanked out his eyeball, its base trailing a bloody root. Blood gushed over his face,
Kaz heard Weiland retching. He tossed the eyeball overboard and jammed his spit-soaked handkerchief into the socket where Uman's eye had been. Then he grabbed Uman's jaw, his gloves leaving red smears on the enforcer's chin. His actions were smooth, precise, as if he were dealing cards at the Crow Club or picking an easy lock, but his rage felt hot and mad and unfamiliar. Something within him had torn loose. "Listen to me," he hissed, his face inches from Uman's. "You have two choices. You tell me what I want to know, and we drop you at our next port, with your pockets full of enough coin to get you sewn up and buy you passage back to Kerch. Or I take the other eye, and I repeat this conversation with a blind man."
"It was just a job," babbled Uman. "Gil's got 5,000 Kruger to bring the black tips out in force. We pulled in some razor gulls, too.
Then why not more men? Why not double your odds?"
"You were supposed to be on the boat when it blew. We were just supposed to take care of the stragglers."
"Who hired you?" Uman wavered, sucking on his lip, snot running from his nose.
"Don't make me ask again, Uman," Kaz said quietly. "Whoever it was can't protect you now. He'll kill me.
And I'll make you wish for death. So you have to weigh those options."
"Pekka Rollins," Uman sobbed. "It was Pekka Rollins."
Even through his own shock, Kaz registered the effect of the name on Jasper and Weiland. Elvar didn't know enough to be intimidated.
"Saints," groaned Jasper.
"We are so screwed."
"Is Rollins leading the crew himself?" Kaz asked Uman.
"What crew?"
"To Fjerda."
"I don't know about no crew. We were just supposed to stop you from getting out of the harbor."
"I see."
"I need a medic. Can you take me to a medic now?"
"Of course," said Kaz. "Right this way." He took Uman by the lapels and hoisted him off his feet, bracing his body against the railing.
"I told you what you wanted,"
Uman screamed, struggling.
"I did what you asked."
Despite Uman's knobby build, he was deceptively strong. Farm strong, like Jasper. He'd probably grown up in the fields. Kaz leaned in so that no one could hear it when he said,
"My wraith would counsel mercy. But thanks to you, she's not here to plead your case."
Without another word, he tipped Uman into the sea.
"No!"
Weiland shouted, leaning over the railing, his face pale, stunned, eyes tracking Uman in the waves. The enforcer's pleas were still audible as his maimed face faded from view.
You said if he helped you.
"Do you want to go over too?" asked Kaz. Weiland took a deep breath, as if sucking in courage, and sputtered,
"You won't throw me overboard. You need me."
"Why do people keep saying that?" "Maybe," said Kaz, "but I'm not in a very rational mood." Jasper set his hand on Weiland's shoulder. "Let it go."
"It's not right."
"Weiland," Jasper said, giving him a little shake, "maybe your tutors didn't cover this lesson, but you do not argue with a man covered in blood and a knife up his sleeve." Weiland pressed his lips into a thin line. Kaz couldn't tell if the kid was frightened or furious, and he didn't much care. Helvar stood silent sentinel, observing it all, looking seasick green beneath his blonde beard. Kaz turned to Jasper. "Fit Helvar with some shackles to keep him honest," he said as he headed below, "and get me clean clothes and fresh water."
"Since when am I your valet?"
"Man with a knife, remember?" he said over his shoulder.
"Man with a gun,"
Jasper called after him. Kaz replied with a time-saving gesture that relied heavily on his middle finger and disappeared below decks. He wanted a hot bath and a bottle of brandy, but he'd settle for being alone and free of the stink of blood for a while. Pekka Rollins. The name rattled through his head like gunfire. It always came back to Pekka Rollins. The man who had taken everything from him. The man who now stood between Kaz and the biggest haul any crew had ever attempted. Would Rollin send someone in his place? Or lead the crew to nab Bo Yul Bayur himself? In the dim confines of his cabin, Kaz whispered, "Brick by brick." Killing Pekka Rollins had always been tempting. But that wasn't enough. Kaz wanted Rollins brought low. He wanted him to suffer the way Kaz had, the way Jordy had. And snatching 30 million Kruger right out of Pekka Rollins' grubby hands was a very good way to start. Maybe Inej was right. Maybe fate did bother with people like him.
14. Nina. In the cramped little surgeon's cabin, Nina tried to put Inej's body back together. But she hadn't been trained for this type of work. For the first 2 years of their education in Ravka's capital, all Grisha Korporalki studied together, took the same classes, performed the same autopsies. But then their training diverged. Healers learned the intricate work of healing wounds, while heart renders became soldiers, experts at doing damage, not undoing it. It was a different way of thinking about what was essentially the same power. But the living asked more of you than the dead. A killing stroke took decision, clarity of intent. Healing was slow, deliberate, a rhythm that required thoughtful study of each small choice. The jobs she'd done for Kaz over the last year helped, and in a way so had her work carefully altering moods and tailoring faces at the White Rose. But looking down at Inej, Nina wished her own school training hadn't been so abbreviated. The Ravkan Civil War had erupted when she was still a student at the Little Palace, and she and her classmates had been forced to go into hiding. When the fighting had ended and the dust had settled, King Nikolai had been anxious to get the few remaining Grisha soldiers trained and in the field. So Nina had spent only 6 months in advanced classes before she'd been sent out on her first mission. At the time, she'd been thrilled. Now she would have been grateful for even another week of school. Inej was lithe, all muscle and fine bones, built like an acrobat. The knife had entered beneath her left arm. It had been a very close thing. A little deeper and the blade would have pierced the apex of the heart. Nina knew that if she simply sealed Inej's skin the way she'd done with Wylan, the girl would just continue to bleed internally. So she'd tried to stop the bleeding from the inside out. She thought she'd managed it well enough, but Inej had lost a lot of blood. And Nina had no idea what to do about that. She'd heard some healers could match one person's blood to another's. But if it was done incorrectly, it was as good as poisoning the patient. The process was far beyond her. She finished closing the wound, then covered Inej with a light wool blanket. For now, all Nina could do was monitor her pulse and breathing. As she settled Inej's arms beneath the blanket, Nina saw the scarred flesh on the inside of her forearm. She brushed her thumb gently over the bumps and ridges. It must have been the peacock feather, the tattoo borne by members of the menagerie, the House of Exotics. Whoever had removed it had done an ugly job of it. Curious, Nina pushed up Inej's other sleeve. The skin there was smooth and unmarked. Inej hadn't taken on the crow and cup. The tattoo carried by any full member of the dregs. Alliances shifted this way and that in the barrel, but your gang was your family, the only protection that mattered. Nina herself bore two tattoos. The one on her left forearm was for the House of the White Rose. The one that counted was on her right. A crow trying to drink from a near-empty goblet. It told the world she belonged to the dregs, that to trifle with her was to risk their vengeance. Inej had been with the dregs longer than Nina, and yet no tattoo. Strange. She was one of the most valued members of the gang, and it was clear Kaz trusted her, as much as someone like Kaz could. Nina thought of the look on his face when he'd set Inej down on the table. He was the same Kaz, cold, rude, impossible. But beneath all that anger, she thought she'd seen something else, too. Or maybe she was just a romantic. She had to laugh at herself. She wouldn't wish love on anyone. It was the guest you welcomed and then couldn't be rid of. Nina brushed Inez's straight black hair back from her face.
Please be okay, she whispered.
She hated the frail waver of her voice in the cabin. She didn't sound like a Grisha soldier or a hardened member of the dregs. She sounded like a little girl who didn't know what she was doing. And that was exactly how she felt. Her training had been too short. She'd been sent out on her first mission too soon. Zoya had said as much at the time, but Nina had begged to go, and they'd needed her. So the older Grisha had relented. Zoya Nazyelensky, a powerful squalor, gorgeous to the point of absurdity, and capable of reducing Nina's confidence to ash with a single raised brow. Nina had worshipped her.
Reckless, foolish, easily distracted.
Zoya had called her all those things and worse. You were right, Zoya. Happy now?
Giddy,
said Jesper from the doorway. Nina startled, and looked up to see him rocking back and forth on the balls of his feet.
Who's Zoya?
He asked. Nina slumped back in her chair.
No one. A member of the Grisha Triumvirate.
Fancy. The ones who run the Second Army?
What's left of it? Ravka's Grisha soldiers had been decimated during the war. Some had fled, most had been killed. Nina rubbed her tired eyes.
Do you know the best way to find Grisha who don't want to be found?
Jesper scrubbed the back of his neck, touched his hands to his guns, returned to his neck. He always seemed to be in motion.
Never gave it much thought, he said.
Look for miracles and listen to bedtime stories. Follow the tales of witches and goblins and unexplained happenings. Sometimes they were just superstition. But often there was truth at the heart of local legends. People who had been born with gifts that their countries didn't understand. Nina had gotten very good at sniffing out those stories.
Seems to me if they don't want to be found, you should just let them be.
Nina cast him a dark glance.
The Druskala won't let them be. They hunt Grisha everywhere.
Are they all charmers like Matthias?
And worse.
I need to find his leg shackles. Kaz gives me all the fun jobs.
Wanna trade? Nina asked wearily. The frenetic energy of Jesper's lanky frame seemed to drop away. He went as still as Nina had ever seen him, and his gaze focused on Inej for the first time since he'd entered the little cabin.
He was avoiding it, Nina realized. He didn't want to look at her.
The blankets shifted slightly with her shallow breaths. When Jesper spoke, his voice was taut, the strings of an instrument tuned to a too-sharp key.
She can't die, he said. Not this way.
Nina peered at Jesper, puzzled.
Not what way?
She can't die,
he repeated. Nina felt a surge of frustration. She was torn between wanting to hug Jesper tight and scream at him that she was trying.
Saints, Jesper, she said. I'm doing my best.
He shifted, and his body seemed to come back alive.
Sorry,
he said a bit sheepishly. He clapped her awkwardly on the shoulder.
You're doing great.
Nina sighed.
Not convincing. Why don't you go chain up a giant blonde?
Jesper saluted and ducked out of the cabin. Annoying as he was, Nina was almost tempted to call him back. With Jesper gone, there was nothing but Zoya's voice in her head, and the reminder that her best wasn't good enough. Inez's skin felt too cool to the touch. Nina laid a hand on each of the girl's shoulders and tried to improve her blood flow, raising her body temperature very slightly. She hadn't been completely honest with Jesper. The Grisha Triumvirate hadn't just wanted to save Grisha from Fjerdan witch hunters. They'd sent missions to the Wandering Isle and Navya Zem because Ravka needed soldiers. They'd sought out Grisha who might be living in secret and tried to convince them to take up residence in Ravka and enter service to the crown. Nina had been too young to fight in the Ravkan Civil War, and she'd been desperate to be part of the rebuilding of the Second Army. It was her gift for languages. Shu, Kalish, Suli, Fjerdan, even some Zemini, that finally overcame Zoya's reservations. She agreed to let Nina accompany her and a team of Grisha examiners to the Wandering Isle. And despite all of Zoya's misgivings, Nina had been a success. Disguised as a traveler, she would slip into taverns and coach houses to eavesdrop on conversations and chat with the locals, then bring the peasant talk back to camp.
If you're going to Marok Glen, make sure to travel by day. Troubled spirits walk those lands. Storms erupt out of nowhere.
The Witch of Fells is real, all right. My second cousin went to her with an outbreak of Siphil and swears he's never been healthier.
What do you mean he's not right in the head? More right than you'll ever be.
They'd found two Grisha families hiding out in the supposed fairy caves of Istamir, and they'd saved a mother, father, and two boys, Inferni, who could control fire, from a mob in Fenford. They even raided a slaving ship near the port in Leflin. Once the refugees had been sorted, those without powers had been offered safe passage back home. Those whose powers had been confirmed by a Grisha examiner were offered asylum in Ravka. Only the old heartrender known as the Witch of Fells chose to remain.
If they want my blood, let them come for it, she'd laughed. I'll take some of theirs in return.
Nina spoke Kalish like a native, and loved the challenge of taking on a new identity in every town. But for all their triumphs, Zoya hadn't been pleased.
Being good with languages isn't enough, she'd scolded. You need to learn to be less big. You're too loud, too effusive, too memorable. You take too many risks.
Zoya, said the examiner they were traveling with. Go easy.
He was a living amplifier. Dead, his bones would have served to heighten Grisha power, no different from the shark teeth or bear claws that other Grisha wore. But alive, he was invaluable to their mission, trained to use his amplifier gifts to sense Grisha power through touch. Most of the time, Zoya was protective of him, but now her deep blue eyes flattened to slits.
My teachers didn't go easy on me. If she ends up chased through the woods by a mob of peasants, will you tell them to go easy?
Nina had stomped off, pride smarting, embarrassed by the tears filling her eyes. Zoya had shouted at her not to go past the ridge, but she'd ignored her, eager to be as far away from the squalor as she could get, and walked right into a Druskella camp. Six blonde boys, all speaking Fjerdan, clustered on a cliff above the shore. They'd made no campfire and were dressed as Kalish peasants, but she'd known what they were right away. They'd stared at her for a long moment, lit only by silvery moonlight.
Oh, thank goodness, she'd said in lilting Kalish. I'm traveling with my family, and I got turned around in the woods. Can one of you help me find the road?
I think she's lost.
One of them translated in Fjerdan for the others. Another rose, a lantern in his hand. He was taller than the others, and all her instincts screamed at her to run as he drew closer.
They don't know what you are, she reminded herself. You're just a nice Kalish girl, lost in the woods. Don't do anything stupid. Lead him away from the others, then take him down.
He raised his lantern, the light shining over both of their faces. His hair was long and burnished gold, and his pale blue eyes glinted like ice beneath a winter sun.
He looks like a painting, she thought.
A saint wrought in gold leaf on the walls of a church, born to wield a sword of fire.
What are you doing out here?
He asked in Fjerdan. She feigned confusion.
I'm sorry, she said in Kalish. I don't understand. I'm lost.
He lunged toward her. She didn't stop to think, but simply reacted, raising her hands to attack. He was too quick. Without hesitation, he dropped the lantern and seized her wrists, slamming her hands together, making it impossible for her to use her power.
Druja,
he said with satisfaction. Witch. He had a wolf's smile. The attack had been a test. A girl lost in the woods cowered. She reached for a knife or a gun. She didn't try to use her hands to stop a man's heart.
Reckless. Impulsive. This was why Zoya hadn't wanted to bring her. Properly trained Grisha didn't make these mistakes. Nina had been a fool, but she didn't have to be a traitor. She pleaded with them in Kalish, not Ravkin, and she didn't cry out for help. Not when they bound her hands, not when they threatened her, not when they tossed her in a rowboat like a bag of millet. She wanted to scream her terror, bring Zoya running, beg for someone to save her. But she wouldn't risk the others' lives. The Druskeller rowed her to a ship anchored off the coast and threw her into a cage below decks full of other captive Grisha. That was when the real horror had begun. Night blended into day in the dank belly of the ship. The Grisha prisoners' hands were kept tightly bound to keep them from using their power. They were fed tough bread crawling with weevils, only enough to keep them alive, and had to ration fresh water carefully since they never knew when they might have it next. They'd been given no place to relieve themselves, and the stink of bodies and worse was nearly unbearable. Occasionally, the ship would drop anchor, and the Druskeller would return with another captive. The Fjerdans would stand outside their cages, eating and drinking, mocking their filthy clothes and the way they smelled. As bad as it was, the fear of what might await them was much more frightening. The Inquisitors at the Ice Court, torture, and inevitably death. Nina dreamed of being burned alive on a pyre and woke up screaming. Nightmare and fear and the delirium of hunger tangled together, so that she stopped being certain of what was real and what wasn't. Then one day, the Druskeller had crowded into the hold dressed in freshly pressed uniforms of black and silver, the white wolf's head on their sleeves. They'd fallen into orderly ranks and stood at attention as their commander entered. Like all of them, he was tall, but he wore a tidy beard, and his long blonde hair showed gray at the temples. He walked the length of the hold, then came to a halt in front of the prisoners.
"How many?"
he asked.
15,
replied the burnished gold boy who had captured her. It was the first time she had seen him in the hold. The commanding officer cleared his throat and clasped his hands behind his back.
"I am Jarl Broom."
A tremor of fear passed through Nina, and she felt it reverberate through the Grisha in the cell, a warning call none of them were free to heed. In school, Nina had been obsessed with the Druskeller. They'd been the creatures of her nightmares with their white wolves and their cruel knives, and the horses they bred for battle with Grisha. It was why she'd studied to perfect her Fjerdan and her knowledge of their culture. It had been a way of preparing herself for them, for the battle to come. And Jarl Broom was the worst of them. He was a legend, the monster waiting in the dark. The Druskeller had existed for hundreds of years, but under Broom's leadership, their force had doubled in size and become infinitely more deadly. He had changed their training, developed new techniques for rooting out Grisha in Fjerda, infiltrated Ravka's borders, and begun pursuing rogue Grisha in other lands, even hunting down slave ships, liberating Grisha captives with the sole purpose of clapping them back in chains and sending them to Fjerda for trial and execution. She'd imagined facing Broom one day as an avenging warrior or a clever spy. She hadn't pictured herself confronting him caged and starving, hands bound, dressed in rags. Broom must have known the effect his name would have. He waited a long moment before he said in excellent Kalish,
"What stands before you is the next generation of Druskeller, the holy order charged with protecting the sovereign nation of Fjerda by eradicating your kind. They will bring you to Fjerda to face trial, and so earn the rank of officer. They are the strongest and best of our kind."
Bullies, Nina thought.
"When we reach Fjerda, you will be interrogated and tried for your crimes."
"Please," said one of the prisoners. "I've done nothing. I'm a farmer. I've done you no harm."
"You are an insult to Jell," Broom replied. "A blight on this earth. You speak peace, but what of your children to whom you may pass on this demonic power? What about their children? I save my mercy for the helpless men and women mowed down by Grisha abominations."
He faced the Druskeller.
Good work, lads, he said in Fjärden. We sail for Jerholm immediately.
The Druskella seemed ready to burst with pride. As soon as Broom exited the hold, they were knocking each other affectionately on the shoulders, laughing in relief and satisfaction.
Good work is right, one said in Fjärden. 15 Grisha to deliver to the Ice Court?
If this doesn't earn us our teeth.
You know it will.
Good. I'm sick of shaving every morning.
I'm going to grow a beard down to my navel.
Then one of them reached through the bars and snatched Nina up by her hair.
I like this one, still nice and round. Maybe we should open that cage door and hose her down.
The boy with the burnished hair smacked his comrade's hand away.
What's wrong with you?
He said, the first time he'd spoken since Broom had vanished. The brief rush of gratitude she'd felt withered when he said,
Would you fornicate with a dog?
What does the dog look like?
The others roared with laughter as they headed above. The golden one, who'd likened her to an animal, was the last to go. And just as he was about to step into the passage, she said in crisp, perfect Fjärden,
What crimes?
He stilled. And when he'd looked back at her, his blue eyes had been bright with hate. She refused to flinch.
How do you come to speak my language?
Did you serve on Ravka's northern border?
I'm Kalish, she lied, and I can speak any language.
More witchcraft.
If by witchcraft you mean the arcane practice of reading. Your commander said we'd be tried for our crimes. I want you to tell me just what crime I've committed.
You'll be tried for espionage and crimes against the people.
We are not criminals,
said a fabricator in halting Fjärden from his place on the floor. He'd been there the longest and was too weak to rise.
We are ordinary people, farmers, teachers.
Not me, Nina thought grimly. I'm a soldier.
You'll have a trial, said the Druskella. You'll be treated more fairly than your kind deserve.
How many Grisha are ever found innocent? Nina asked.
The fabricator groaned.
Don't provoke him. You will not sway his mind.
But she gripped the bars with her bound hands and said, How many? How many have you sent to the pyre? He turned his back on her.
Wait!
He ignored her.
Wait, please. Just some fresh water. Would you treat your dogs like this?
He paused, his hand on the door.
I shouldn't have said that.
Dogs know loyalty, at least. Fidelity to the pack. It is an insult to the dog to call you one.
I'm going to feed you to a pack of hungry hounds, Nina thought. But all she said was,
Water. Please.
He vanished into the passage. She heard him climb the ladder, and the hatch closed with a loud bang.
Don't waste your breath on him,
the fabricator counseled.
He will show you no kindness.
But a short while later, the Druskella returned with a tin cup and a bucket of clean water. He'd set it down inside the cell and slammed the bars shut without a word. Nina helped the fabricator drink, then gulped down a cup herself. Her hands were shaking so badly, half of it sloshed down her blouse. The Fjärden turned away, and with pleasure, Nina saw she'd embarrassed him.
I'd kill for a bath, she taunted. You could wash me.
Don't talk to me,
he growled, already stalking toward the door. He hadn't returned, and they'd gone without fresh water for the next 3 days. But when the storm hit, that tin cup had saved her life. Nina's chin dipped, and she jerked awake. Had she nodded off?
Matthias was standing in the passage outside the cabin.
He filled the doorway, far too tall to be comfortable below decks. How long had he been watching her?
Quickly, Nina checked Inej's pulse and breathing, relieved to find that she seemed to be stable for now.
Was I sleeping? She asked.
Dozing.
She stretched, trying to blink away her exhaustion.
but not snoring? He said nothing, just watched her with those ice chip eyes. They let you have